Our flight director this afternoon is Mr. Clifford Charlesworth, and he will first run through his notes. Seated immediately to my left is Dr. Charles Berry, in anticipation of any medical questions you might have. And to our far left is Osro Covington, who is from the Goddard Space Flight Center and can be responsive to any network kinds of questions. Cliff?
Good afternoon.
Yes, it's happening. Yeah. Okay, we came on shift with my team this morning about... How about now? Okay. We came on shift this morning with my team about 5 o'clock local, lapse time of some 22 hours. At this time, things were fairly quiet. The CDR was awake, managing the spacecraft. The LMP and the CMP were in their sleep cycle. One of the first things that we did was to take a look at the flight plan for the remainder of the shifts, particularly in view of the trajectory that we're on. We had a mid-course maneuver point scheduled for something like 28 hours elapsed, and what we spent the first couple of hours or so deciding was whether or not we needed to make that mid-course. It turned out that we did not, and I would like to say a little more about that situation later. Based on that, we decided to give the crew the option of having the CMP and the LMP get an extra hour and a half sleep. As you know, the I guess like all of us, the first day or so, you don't seem to sleep as well as you should. So we relayed this to the CDR, and he agreed. But as it turned out, the CMP and the LMP woke up about on time anyhow. From that point on, we proceeded with the flight plan of updating trajectory block data. These are the maneuvers required if we should lose communication and so forth. We did delete some things based on the fact that we chose not to do a mid-course. We deleted the some of the navigation sightings. We deleted an alignment. And we deleted the things that would have been required in preparation for the mid-course maneuver. We did proceed and update the state vector of the to the spacecraft. That is the trajectory determination that we have. And everything else proceeded along fairly normally until, I've forgotten the exact time, we got an indication of some medical problem with the crew, and we'll go into that later. I would like to say a couple of words on the overall status of the flight in terms of the spacecraft and how well we think we know the trajectory and where we are at this point. I indicated that we do not need to make the mid-course, or did not at 28 hours. We've been tracking now since the mid-course maneuver yesterday with the SPS, which is a total, I guess, now some 18 to 20 hours. In that period of time, the trajectory data has fit very, very well from the sights that we've seen. In other words, we feel like we've really got a good handle on the trajectory. The mid-course maneuver that was required that we computed for 28 hours came up to something like 0.76 feet per second. Now, at this period of flight, you always have an uncertainty, and the uncertainty in the knowledge of the orbit is probably on the order of a quarter to a half a foot a second. So we would really be kidding ourselves if we executed the maneuver. Now, if you want to talk about in the future, we looked out ahead to the next mid-course maneuver point, and right now, based on the tracking data, we're showing something a little over a foot a second that would have to be done at 61 hours elapsed. Now, this is the last mid-course maneuver point prior to LOI. The net result of all of this is that we're very, very happy with the MISFIN tracking data that we have. We're very happy with the solutions that we're getting and with how well the data is fitting. So much for the trajectory. In terms of the spacecraft, everything is looking very good. Power systems all look good. The PTC mode seems to be working well. That is, we're not spending a great deal of RCS to maintain the slow roll rate. It's about what we expected. The temperatures around the spacecraft, as well as we can tell, are remaining about what we expected in terms of overall thermal effects. The rest of the spacecraft is all working quite well, and I've been particularly impressed with the communications. You may have heard some traffic in the last hour or so on the comm, which may have sounded like we were having some troubles, but actually we were running a series of communications tests, so this was not unexpected either. The high-gain antenna seems to be working well. We've actually been able to get low bit rate data out to a further distance than we thought we would be able to. It seems that the signal strengths from the spacecraft are about what we predicted, although it seems like some of the MISFIN sites were able to do a little better job of receiving than we thought we would. So we're a little ahead on that score. I guess that's about it for this shift. Things are pretty well back to normal on the flight plan as I left the control center. We were maybe 5 or 10 minutes behind on one of the communications tests. We're getting ready to start the EAT period. As far as I know, the TV situation is still as per flight plan, and everything seems to be settling down. We're pretty well back on the normal timeline. And I guess that's about it in summary for this particular shift.
Chuck, do you want to amplify it on these people who heard that conversation you had with Frank, you and Mike?
Well, I might try and set it in perspective as well as we know the situation. I think we have a pretty good handle on it at the present time. I'd like to assure all of you that it's not my aim to continue to treat celestial illness. It appears that that seems to be something we're getting into here. But in spite of precautions that have been taken, it appears that we have contracted something that has involved, to some extent, all three crew members. And it looks at the moment as if Frank started out about 19 hours into the flight, some 10 to 11 hours ago, and developed some nausea and some vomiting, a loose stool, and he has had some headache and some chills and fever with this. He is markedly improved after the last sleep period of 2 hours. He has now taken some medication. We put all three of them on low motil. The other two crewmen have had only some nausea at the present time, and none of them at the moment are nauseated. They will be given Mirazine if they do have the nausea return. There is an interesting comment that there also was some uneasiness. It was described by Frank as a feeling of uneasiness at any rate. When they were free in the spacecraft, when they were moving about off the couches and got out of the suits, and they didn't really relate this to exactly a nausea feeling, but the implication is there that there is some tie initially to between some of the nausea that the other two, Jim and Bill, have felt with this movement about the spacecraft early in the game. So this may be the type of thing that you see with motion sickness here, and it's just going to take some more watching to see. None of them have it at the present time, and it probably was a self-limited thing. As far as other areas in the medical world here, the water situation has gone along very well. We're not having any problems with that. Bioinstrumentation is all working extremely well, and we're getting electrocardiograms that are as good as those you can get in your doctor's office from 120,000 miles away, and that's a pretty unique thing. It's very reassuring to us as we look at the lunar mission.
Okay, John Barber over here.
What was the roof of the mouth problem? You were looking for a bacterial infection when you asked about the sore throat.
Yes, and from the way that we got this in the discussion with Frank, John, I feel that he may just have that as a result of the vomiting that he's had. That's the way I feel about it now. I feel it's just from the vomiting, and I don't think that he has an infection involving the throat.
What about Anders? What's his status?
Well, he said he originally was saying that he felt medium so-so, or some words like that. At any rate, it ends up to be a situation where he had some nausea, and apparently at the present time, he has no nausea. So that's really all he's had and all that Jim has had. They both have felt, Jim has felt well since early in the flight. Now, the odds are here, I guess before somebody asks it, there is a chance, certainly, that the two, Jim and Bill, can both come down with this. And that's been our experience, and I think we have to realistically look at that, and we are. And, of course, depending on how long the period is here, we'd like to not have that happen in lunar orbit, of course. So we're sort of watching the patients, as it were, at the moment.
Recognize this as any particular entity?
No, it's impossible to do that, John. I guess the common words that are used are something like stomach flu is used. I hate to use the term flu here, but it's probably a viral 24-hour viral gastroenteritis thing. Now, we do know that there was some of this going around the Cape. We have had it in some of the other crewmen, not any of the prime or backup crew with this group, but we did have it in the past 2 and 3 week period at the Cape and some of the other crew.
Bill.
The feeling of restlessness or uneasiness or whatever last night that caused Borman to ask for a sleeping pill and his comments about lack of appetite are also related to this.
Also related to this illness?
To this illness.
I think they may well be, Bill. I think they're partially related to it. We expected Frank to not sleep very well, expected all of them not to, except that the other two had a much longer period before they had to go to sleep. And I think probably the fact that he wasn't, had started out probably not feeling as well as he thought and felt he wasn't going to be able to sleep, had gone ahead and taken the sleeping pill.
Go ahead.
Day after tomorrow early, one or more feverish guys who were down with something like flu, would it be your recommendation that the orbital phase of this thing be scrubbed and they come back, or would you think it'd be safe to let them go ahead and orbit?
Well, we're going to have to ask ourselves, and are asking ourselves that question, but I guess at the moment my feeling is, Bill, that if it turns out to be 24 hours and Frank is well and continues well here now to improve all the time, I think we'd be all right. I think we'd probably get by the orbital phase. I think we'd get them, the rest of them over this probably before we got to the orbital phase. It's conceivable. And we're going to have to get their opinion, too, about their capability to perform in this state. Now, I think Frank has still been doing that. They've obviously been trying to help Frank, but he has still been performing.
And if toward the end of the mission you had one or more sick people in that spacecraft, do you think that they could manage to operate as a crew and handle themselves in getting back in all right?
I think if we have nothing worse than what we've seen thus far, I think, yes, they can. I think you get a lot of adrenaline, which helps you in a situation like this, too. As only for the record on the second off thing, I since we're recording, I'd like to say that Julie Bergman owes me two dinners now for that second off.
Henry Simmons.
Dr. Barry, it seems that I do understand that Borman did not become ill, severely ill, until about 19 hours of flight, but it... why weren't these episodes of nausea or uneasiness part of the other two men reported earlier? Wasn't that a relevant medical fact that you should have had very, very early in the flight?
I think that from what I understand at the moment, Henry, they had a feeling that this was due to moving about in the weightless state within the spacecraft, and probably did not relate it to anything else at that point in time, and didn't think that it was significant. We'd get that in debriefing post-flight. And I doubt that it was significant. I think they probably didn't get worried about it until Frank became ill.
Roy?
Covington, I wonder if you can give us a little idea about the TV routing that should be coming up very shortly. How will you get the pictures to Houston? What route will you use, and how will the network work?
Ozzy, if I could preempt you, I've learned something since we left the control center, which I think will be of interest. The TV pass may come as much as 10 minutes earlier than we thought it would. That's why I've been picking this thing up back and forth. In which case, we'll just break the conference and play it up here and go back to the conference, if that's agreeable. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
For this first pass, the routing should be directly from the spacecraft to the Goldstone station, and then through a scan converter at that point to convert it into a proper format for just standard transcontinental television transmission into the AT&T lines back here to Houston. Yes, for this pass.
Excuse me, Dr. Beck. The temperatures of the three astronauts, do you know them?
No, we do not have a temperature recording at the present time. We were going to ask for temperatures and did in one part of the conversation, I think, but when Frank awoke, he was afebrile, and the other two have had no indication of elevated temperatures. So at the moment, they appear to all three be afebrile. Frank did have some fever during the night last night, fever and chill.
And on the light of the Apollo 7 and Apollo 8, is there any chance that a pure oxygen environment has a catalytic effect on the viruses?
Well, I can't answer that any more than to say that from some animal studies it appears that is true. As you realize, we don't have a pure oxygen environment here yet, though, in this spacecraft. At this point in time.
Art Hill.
I'd like to get some clarification of some times here. Chuck, you said that Frank reported this illness at about 19 hours into the flight, or just when did you learn about it? How far after Frank had this illness did you learn about it, and at what point did you inform Mr. Haney about it?
Yeah. It was about 27 hours and 35 minutes, I think, is the time that we wrote down when we got a tape. This came in our first indication. This was on a tape, which was dumped through Madrid and Ascension Island and to us. And there was a long tape. There were several things on this tape, and this was toward the end of the tape. And we listened to one whole tape and then to a part of another one. It was about 27:35, as I remember from the log, when we finally got this first word of the on the tape. And then there's some conversations ensued after that.
And you told Mr. Haney at that point, or?
Yes, it was just...
I became aware of it, of the general nature of it, Art, yeah.
Was it within the hour or what that you learned about it?
Sir?
Was it within the hour or what that you learned about it?
I don't know.
After
what,
that
I became aware of?
Yes.
I became aware of the general nature of about the same time. I did not hear the tape at that point, but I became aware that through... Cliff, I believe, was the first to tell me.
Okay, then, why the procedure of waiting so long on Frank reporting this? Shouldn't he have done it on the air-to-ground link sooner than putting it on this tape, which was a long time before it was played back?
We had some discussion about that on the last mission, and we're... The crew felt, I think, on the last flight that we were getting those tape dumps all right away. I thought we had that straightened out, but apparently they still think we get the tape dumps and can listen to them very rapidly. This is more rapid than on the last flight, and everybody felt we would because we'd be in contact all the time. Last time, some of them were dumped over ships and things, and we were still getting them a week ago. it's their option as to how they wanted to get that word down, and we left it with Frank that they could come down air to ground, or they could put things on the tape. In retrospect, I don't know why they did this on the tape the first time, rather than come down directly to us.
I think the question sort of goes back to why was there a time lapse between his feeling the symptoms and him letting ground control know about it.
I don't know that anybody but the crew could answer that.
Yeah, I don't think.
Please review the precautions that were taken at the Cape to protect the crew members from viral infection.
Well, we had a modified isolation plan that was instituted, and as we've told most of you before, it's difficult, if not it's impossible, I guess the best way, to totally isolate the crew due to the things that they have to do in this immediate pre-flight period. We have tried to limit their contacts as much as possible. That also is difficult, but we've tried to cut down on things where they'd be exposed to crowds and to new people that they weren't constantly being exposed to for some flight-related reason. And they have been living in the quarters, and the food, of course, is thus controlled in the quarters for a period of 2 weeks pre-flight. All that food is controlled. The water, of course, we know about, and we think those things are all important. The air conditioning and this sort of thing is checked in the crew quarters also. So that's about as much as could be done in a basic preventive medicine plan. Of course, they were immunized against the Hong Kong strain, and I've heard stories coming out already that they've got the Hong Kong flu, and I think that is definitely not true. And I suppose someone is speculating about that.
I did, sir.
Okay. Didn't? Okay. But I think that's definitely not true. Pardon?
Only against that strain?
Against that strain, correct.
The other, they didn't get...
They did not against the other strains. That's correct.
Is Asian flu or Hong Kong flu worse or better?
Yes,
easier?
Worse.
It is
worse.
Okay.
Chuck,
Louis?
I realize that radiation is not a major problem, and that this morning's report showed the amount of radiation very, very small. But would you comment on the possible effects of radiation upon the people?
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up, because I figured as soon as we heard nausea, somebody was going to say that too. I guess we better wipe that one out. The total dose, we just got a personal dosimeter readings just before we left over there. And one of them is 40 millirads. One of them is, we think one of the other instruments is probably failed, the one on Jim Lovell, because it's still reading 0.64, and it's read 0.64 for three times, and we think that it's failed probably. On the LMP, he has received the most dose of anyone so far, and that's 250 millirads. 250 millirads. Now that's about the dose that was received on the 14-day flight. So none of these doses have any real medical. You couldn't get any symptoms whatsoever from any of these doses. It'd be impossible to do. But of course, as I guess you're indicating here, nausea and is one of the early effects of radiation, but it's in doses, depth doses, that would be up like 15 rads to get even 10% of the people exposed to have anything. So we're not even anywhere near that kind of a ballpark.
Ed.
Dr. Berry, did you say that Borman was 40 millirads and Anders 200 and some odd?
That's correct.
What would account for that kind of variation?
Well, it's positioning in the spacecraft, right? The differences in shielding depending on where they are, and all the good physicists can talk to you about the solid angles and all that sort of thing. You know, the positions that where they're getting hit. So there is a difference, and there'll be a difference between the three.
Chuck, aren't you going to tell them about your visitor this morning? I think that was a wonderful coincidence. Dr. Denton Cooley showed up, and right in the middle of this little medical swivet. He assured me he had nothing surgical in mind. But.
We're not figuring on transplanting any one of the three. We want to make that clear.
No rejection.
Denton called yesterday and wanted to know if he could come out this morning, and so we'd made an appointment to have him come out and talk with me for a while at 11 this morning, and that was just when all this happened. He walked in the door.
I was sure somebody had observed that, and they'd really think we were up to something.
Harry, one other thing. You got the report on Borman's illness at 2735. You said, what time did he record that on the tape?
I honestly don't know what time that was recorded on the tape. Does anybody?
I can only take a guess, Ed. He reported, and I can't recall the exact times. We can dig them back out through some of my more detailed notes. They called down and indicated we had just done a tape dump, and that there was some voice comments on there that to play back, which we attempted to do, and. There was no indication from the crew of any urgency or anything involved. We did set up to play back from Ascension. As someone said earlier, there was a great deal of other data on this particular dump because we took a complete one. By the time we sorted that out and we had some sort of a problem, which I don't have a handle on yet, in transmission between here and Ascension, it must have been a couple of hours or a little more before we got the information back on the tape. Paul,
I've got I looked at my log and I show this figure that Chuck has as 2740. He gave you 2735. This is GET time. The private conversation began at lapse time of 28 hours and 10 minutes. And we reported the matter at 28 hours 20 minutes. In ever larger detail for approximately the next hour, and at 29:45, we played the tape on the private conversation.
But I think you're pretty close to right. But I can check it to be sure.
That means is there was a time lag of at least 5 hours between the onset of these symptoms and the time that the astronauts even sent the tape down to notify you of that.
Which says that that's a very bad way to report symptoms, which I think we've made a point of.
Rudy?
But which also says they weren't particularly concerned. Yeah, that's right.
What are you going to recommend about changes in the flight plan to give these guys some more rest today and tonight and tomorrow?
Well, we certainly are looking at that to make sure that we do get adequate sleep periods into the flight plan between now and the lunar orbit phase. And we're just looking at the flight plan now to figure out how we're going to assure that adequate sleep periods for all three of them. Frank only got figures he got about 2 hours in this last period, so he's still down on the sleep. And so we're going to have to do some rejiggling here, and I can't really tell you how it's going to work out at the moment. We're still working it.
Right back there in the third row. Vic, wait for the mic, Vic.
Just how much sleep has each of these men had, Dr. Barry?
Well, a total of Frank had 5.5 hours of what he called fitful sleep, the one in his first sleep period. Then when he had this second period of rest here, he had 2 hours. And he said that was 2 hours of pretty fair sleep. The other two I can't tell you because they were just getting that report when I ran to come over here. And I don't know, that's probably come in. You may have heard it since on the tapes if you were listening out there. But I don't know what either of them got. This sort of got lost in some of the activities that were going on. And they were just giving that report at the time that I left.
Not clear on whether or not you've just recommended these various medications or whether they've taken them. What have they actually taken that you know about?
They all have taken Lomotil. To my knowledge, they have taken no Mirazine. They will tell us if they take the Mirazine. They will only do that if they have nausea return.
Did any of them say that he had not felt well before launch?
No. They were all really in fine shape at launch. As a matter of fact, we were very fortunate during that immediate pre-flight period. We didn't have any of the things like we did with the last crew in the immediate pre-flight period.
We heard something.
No, that wasn't before launch time. He reported in one of these, in this conversation, this business that I was telling you, that when they got out of the suit, he was the first one out of his suit, the first one out of the couch, because he had a lot of navigational chores he had to do very early in the flight. And he was one of the first ones out in order to get ready for TLI. And so he was the first one who noticed some nausea in flight, early in the
We're,
flight.
We're estimating the TV pass in 8 minutes. Go ahead, Art.
Dr. Berry, do you think this introduces into the field of celestial medicine, introduces some new components, possibly psychological or a new dimension of biological clock that we might not have thought about? And secondly, I understand there are only three Marazine pills aboard. Are there more than that?
12.
I have an answer to the other question.
Okay. Did I hear your other question right, Art, that you said, what is this, how does this relate to biological clocks? Is that what you said?
It's possibly a new dimension there or a psychological component in celestial medicine.
Well, of course, there are always psychological components to any illness, I guess. I think any good physician would state that. A wart to a fan dancer is a very important thing where it doesn't mean anything to somebody else, for instance, and it depends on your psychological look at your illness. But I think that certainly there are some of these, but I don't think that there's anything that's significant just because we happen to be 120,000 miles from the Earth here. I don't think there's anything magic about that, in other words, that's doing anything here or has altered their reactions because of their clocks. We are tampering somewhat with biological clocks, as you know, just because of the sleep cycles the way we're going here. And fatigue can certainly render us more susceptible to things. And we want to try and avoid that as much as possible. It's become almost impossible to totally avoid that in planning missions the way we do. If you intend to try and keep one individual awake, which certainly seems necessary and desirable, and if you intend to do that, and the activities then that are required, and particularly in this phase for the lunar orbit, it's just almost impossible to not invade somebody's sleep cycle to the point that it isn't exactly the way it is here on Earth. We've tried to get closer to that than we did in the last flight, and I think it's better than it was in the last flight, but it's still not perfect. So I don't think, in one sentence, I really don't think that anything is magic or mysterious about just space itself here. I think that the confinement of being in a vehicle does pose problems for us from an infectious illness standpoint, and it's strange. I hope every Apollo flight is not going to be like this.
Dr. Berry, would you clear up who has taken secanol and who hasn't, or if anybody has?
Yes, Frank Borman has taken secanol. He's the only one so far who has taken secanol. The other two were tired enough they did not take it.
When did he take it? Before he got feeling ill or after?
Before.
Is it conceivable, is the symptomatology such that the secanol could have been responsible for his illness?
Negative. No.
He said at the pre-flight astronauts conference that he absolutely didn't want to take any secanol. He had no intention of ever taking it, and I'm just wondering if we haven't got a little psychological reaction here.
No. They were tested after that press conference, I think. We tested the crew. I don't remember which press conference you're talking about, but I'm sure I know we tested them after that, because they didn't have any press conferences after we had them in the last 2 weeks at the Cape, and that's when the testing was done. And during that period of time, they became familiar with their own personal reactions to the drug, and while I think none of them are real pill takers, they realized the importance of taking the pill if it was needed for rest, and Frank certainly did, and I think that's indicated by his coming down and asking permission to take it.
When using secanol, what are the contraindications and what are the expected side effects under the FDA labeling? Do you know offhand? Mostly the side effects.
Well, nausea is not a side effect. Some people have a hangover effect from it, where they develop they feel like they have a hangover. They just feel sort of clouded mentally, and they complain that they have trouble in their actions, motor actions. They feel sort of it's sort of like a drunk sensation. Now that's very rare, and we wanted to be sure of that, though, in these crewmen, and particularly because we want them to be able to respond to emergencies. So they were tested very carefully and wakened an hour after they had the second all and made to do things that were difficult to do and had to be accurate in reading checklists back and forth and this sort of thing so that they didn't make any errors. And they were able to do this very well, all three of them, and they were tested on two occasions. So.
Well, is totally inconsistent with what you're seeing here.
Yes,
clinically.
That's correct.
John?
I'm maybe a little overly suspicious or a little fuzzy on my understanding, but with all the talk about private conversations and returning to normal voice channels, we kind of get the feeling we're missing a lot. Are we?
No, you're not.
No, you're
this
not.
Possibility existed and was exercised to some degree in Apollo 7. And I regret one thing, that we did not make this more clear in our preliminary conferences. They're coming up now. Let's break and watch the television. Okay, the fellow handling the ground side of that was astronaut Ken Mattingly. And John, as I recall, you were asking how much are we holding back just before we... I started to assure you there will be no voice conversations held out. There exists a mechanism for a private conversation. It's a crew option if they want to go to that mode, or the ground may elect to go to that mode. But in all cases, we will paraphrase as quickly as we're able what the nature of the conversation, quickly as we can, we will make available to you the tape, just as we did this morning.
Tape?
That unedited tape, no editing.
So even if the crew decides they want to go to private conversation, we get it afterwards?
Yes, sir. Back here.
Dr. Barry, what plans do you have to make for upcoming missions, for changes in bodily functions on which you'll have telemetry, and for changes in the contents of the medicine chest?
I don't think we have any changes that we're going to make, Jonathan, for the telemetry. We will, on the next flight, for the first time, we'll get all three crewmen at the same time. As I guess you know, this is the last flight where we have to switch and timeshare the telemetry. As far as the medical kit's concerned, I don't see any reason at the moment to do any changing with the contents of the medical kit at the present time. If experience shows us, we always have that option. We vary it sometimes depending upon individuals and their sensitivities and things of this sort, but we have no major changes in mind for the kit.
If I can ask one other question, as long as I've got the mic, Cliff, would there be if the other lens is too sensitive, light level wise, would it be possible to use one of the tinted faceplates from one of the helmets as a filter?
I don't know the answer to that. Sorry. I would like to make a general comment. I thought that was quite a feat. That was a pretty nice picture from 120,000 miles. I think that's a testimony to the equipment we're flying and the spacecraft, and they sounded pretty good to me.
Chuck, just a question in retrospect. What would have been your reaction 10 or 12 hours ago if you had known Frank was vomiting at that time? Your knowledge of his physical well-being coupled with the flight or the mission rules, how would you have reacted officially?
Well, I doubt that I would have reacted any differently. I'm concerned anytime anyone vomits particularly in this spacecraft and in the weightless state. We're not happy about vomiting. I think that this is a reassuring thing to see the activity that's going on here. I think that We saw that same sort of thing during the last mission, too, with the crew being ill. I don't know that I would have made any decision any differently. I wouldn't have said turn around and come back. I guess that's what you're getting at, and I certainly would not have said that.
If the Apollo 7 crew exhibited any of this motion sickness when they first got out of there?
No, they did not.
They did not?
They did not.
An individual thing, do you think?
Yes, this is always individual, and I guess I still need some better feel as to how much this is involved in all three here. It appears from what they have said that all three have had some of this initially at the beginning of the flight.
We promised to go to the Cape, and we've almost overlooked that. Let's get down there.
Can you hear us here from the Cape?
This is Dick Lewis, Chicago Sun-Times, for Dr. Barry. Suppose possibilities of the symptoms have been explored. I wanted to ask about one more. Is there any indication or supposition that some of this may be due to these boys being beyond the magnetic field for the first time? No one has ever gone out this far, and this possibility has been suggested to some of us here.
No, we don't think that that's so. That's all I can tell you, Dick. I don't have any feeling or any evidence that's the case, that the magnetosphere is involved.
That's all the questions we have here from the Cape.
Question here.
Dr. Barry, you saw the astronauts on TV from an eyeball diagnosis point of view. Do they seem to be over this malady or whatever you want to call it, malaise they had? Or what is your eyeball diagnosis after watching the pictures?
I think it's reassuring to see this picture. I think that I would doubt that they're having much in the way of nausea at the moment, and this is what I reported to you a while ago, that none of the three at the time that I had last talked to them before leaving the control center reported that they were nauseated. Now, you all know that you have had illnesses where you can perform and do things. You continue to work even when you feel terrible, and I think if there's one thing that I feel characterizes the astronaut, it's something that he's dedicated to the job enough that he could perform the job with a great many handicaps physically. And for that reason, I think that there's little doubt here that what the symptoms and things that they have given us are accurate, and that I think they are getting well. As far that the one who had the worst symptoms certainly is getting well. And I just hope that it continues that way, and the outlook certainly looks good from what I've seen here.
Okay, let's let everybody get back to work. Thank you.
Good. I need to go.